is Visionary, a show exploring how nuclear powers your world. I'm Mary Carpenter.
And I'm Jordan Houghton. Let's jump in.
Hey, Jordan.
Hey, Mary. And hello, Visionaries. Thanks for tuning in.
Hey, Visionaries. We're so excited you're here. And this is a really cool episode. And for any of my fellow WebMD enthusiasts who have decided that, you know, you have to like dig to a deep hole and diagnose yourself with a variety of things, this episode is for you because we're actually talking to a real doctor who is brilliant and knows what she's talking about.
The most amazing thing to me about our guest today, who her name is Dr. Pauline Moyart, is she is 26 years old and she is doing absolutely like world-changing research in medicine. And I'm just so inspired by her. And it's like another example of I'm so grateful for so many of the people that we get to work with in this industry who are making a huge difference.
She is so cool and so impressive. I mean, yeah, she is young and at the forefront of nuclear medicine. You know, she talks a bit about how nuclear medicine's used to treat cancer. And I had no idea that it is so advanced now that before they use it in the medical procedure, they can literally target the exact part of the body they're going for. I mean, that's so impressive. She talked about how she's, you know, using this for dementia and doing all these studies to try and combat that terrible disease. So, you know, I think maybe some of our listeners are familiar with how nuclear power plants play a role in public health. During the COVID-19 pandemic, isotopes sterilized billions of pieces of medical equipment in hospitals during COVID-19. But there, you know, there's so many other ways that nuclear plays a part in, you know, saving lives and touching diseases that touch a lot of our lives as well. So it was a really cool conversation.
It's interesting to me just how many facets nuclear touches in medicine, because there are obviously the diagnostic tools, and then there are treatment tools. And then to your point, even using isotopes to sterilize equipment, which is just, it's amazing. I feel like this is going to be the first of many medical focused conversations we'll cover here on Visionary. Mary, I have to ask you though, because I know you were able to fit in a Kim Kardashian reference into this episode, and it was done in a really interesting way because we know that she and other celebrities, she's not the only one, do these like full body scans that will look for cancer, and you kind of like get the whole picture. But they're really expensive. Obviously, if you're a celebrity, you have a ton of disposable income, so why not? But I thought Pauline's take on that was actually interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of taken the internet by storm. Even, you know, a bunch of influencers are doing these scans now. An influencer I follow actually found a brain tumor from one of the scans. So, you know, it's very, very interesting and, you know, tempting to get one of these, but it is expensive. They are cost prohibitive. Hopefully one day, you know, they'll be easily accessible. You know, I do think that they could save lives in the long run, but Pauline does have a really interesting take that, you know, there's a lot of other things you can do to support your health. You know, you don't have to jump immediately to the Kim Kardashian body scan. So yeah, it was really interesting to get Pauline's take on, you know, kind of this huge trend that we're seeing all over the place. But, you know, it's a good trend though, right? Like, it's a positive trend to take control of your health. So it's a better trend than I've seen some other trends that have taken the internet by storm. I do feel like people are, you know, like a lot of people have been talking about becoming sober curious. And, you know, I know a lot of people myself who have, you know, cut out alcohol. You know, people have, seems like 2024 to me seems like a year of health and wellness. And, you know, this body scan trend is kind of building into that, but I will take that trend any day.
Yeah, better for the better than for the worse.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's jump into it. We're thrilled to welcome Pauline Moyart to our podcast today. She is a nuclear medical resident based in Belgium, and is currently studying dementia for her PhD research. She is also a content creator with 160,000 subscribers on YouTube, and her top video has garnered more than 10 million views. Thanks so much for coming on and chatting with Mary and I today. We're really excited to have this conversation. I'd love if you could start by sharing a bit about yourself and what sparked your interest in studying medicine.
Yes. First of all, thanks for having me, Jordan and Mary. So my name is Pauline. I'm 26 years old. I'm from Belgium. I have a 7-month-old son, and I studied med school in Belgium too. And we start med school right after high school. So I started at the age of 18. I know that in Canada, most people do an undergrad first and then start med school. So, and I think why I started, if I look back, I just wanted to help people. My friends always called me the mommy of the group. So I think that was the best option for me at that point. So I did an entrance exam. In Belgium, we have to do one big exam, and about 5,000 people try that exam, and only 500 pass. And luckily, I was one of those 500.
It's really impressive. And you're not just a doctor, but also a successful content creator, like Jordan mentioned, with over 160,000 subscribers on YouTube and millions of views. What inspired you to start that channel? And did you have any prior experience creating content?
Yeah, good question. So I started med school at the age of 18. That was in 2015. And then med school in Belgium is 6 years. So after those 6 years, I graduated as a doctor. And then I decided to go into nuclear medicine. And I'm currently combining nuclear medicine residency with a PhD. And I had the opportunity to move to Canada for 2 years. So from 2021 to 2023, I lived in Canada. And we arrived there during, I think, the second COVID lockdown it was. And yeah, what do you do if you're there with your husband and you're stuck in a house and you don't have any friends there? I didn't have a social life. I couldn't go to the gym. So that's when I thought, oh, well, let's start make one YouTube video and we'll see where it goes. And yeah, one more thing that I learned from the first months of my PhD was that it seemed to me that the more people know about a subject, the more difficult it was to explain things in a simple way. I always work with people who are so much smarter than me, and I often have to ask them for help. And most of the time I'm sitting there and I'm nodding, but actually I don't have a clue what they're saying. And I realized that there are many people who are thinking in the same way. And that's why I started this YouTube channel.
It seems like medicine and nuclear energy have a lot in common in that space. Asking questions and getting really complicated answers.
Did you expect your channel to blow up the way that it has when you first started?
Oh, absolutely not. So my first video was launched, I think it was December 25, because I didn't have much to do. And then I started with 0 views, 0 subscribers. And then it took me, I think, 3 or 4 months to get to 300 subscribers. And then I remember that there was a point where I said to my husband, I'm going to delete everything because no one knows that I'm doing this and it feels like I'm failing. So just like, let's forget that this happened and delete everything. But he said I couldn't do it. And so I didn't. And then a few months later, I hit my first 1,000 subscribers. And then it blew up. From year one to year two, I had suddenly 100,000 subscribers. So it went really fast at that point.
So you have all these subscribers now. What kind of audiences are you reaching with your content? Who are you talking to?
Mainly young people between, I would say, 20 and 35 years old. I have a mixture. I have a lot of people with some kind of medical background. People watching my nuclear medicine videos are most often technologists or nurses or doctors. But I also have videos about the symptoms of a heart attack or the symptoms of a stroke. And that, yeah, people with a whole lot, like a different kind of backgrounds watch that kind of video. So it's, all kinds of people, I would say.
Why do you think so many people are interested in nuclear medicine?
I think because most people do not know what nuclear medicine is. Like when they hear the word nuclear medicine, they're often afraid of the word. Some people even think that nuclear medicine is dangerous. I often have people who do not want to have a PET scan, which is a nuclear medicine type of scan, because they think they will get cancer from it or because it's too dangerous. But they actually don't know that it's a safe procedure and that it can do so many amazing things. It can save people's life.
How do you reassure your patients that it's safe and effective and a life-saving treatment?
I often give them a comparison. Like if I compare a bone scan, which is a type of nuclear medicine procedure, with a CT scan, which is a radiology type of scan, they do not know that a CT scan gives at least double the amount of radioactivity than that of a bone scan. And I also often tell them that there are also natural sources of radiation in the ground. So people just walking around are getting radioactivity. And lastly, when we're flying, there's also quite a lot of radioactivity. For example, aircrew members experience about the same level of radiation annually compared to that of a bone scan without ever having a bone scan. So I think we just have to put it in perspective.
I love that you're doing that. I have found in this work that it's true. A lot of people don't realize how much naturally occurring exposure to radiation that they get just going about their daily lives. We heard that initially nuclear medicine wasn't on your radar and you even contemplated calling in sick when it was introduced during your medical school rotations. Can you share your perspective on that experience and what changed for you?
Yes, of course. So the last 1.5 years of med school in Belgium consists of doing clinical rotations. So that means that every month you work in a different hospital with different doctors of a different specialty. And I had to do 1 week of radiology. And of that 1 week, I had to do only 1 day of nuclear medicine. We only had 1 hour of nuclear medicine in our whole med school. And I thought, okay, why would I like nuclear medicine? It's only sitting behind a desk the whole day and it's very technical and I won't see any patients. So I thought this won't be something for me. But yeah, I didn't call in sick, so I went. And that day, so much changed because it was a very kind doctor who showed me everything. And what I didn't know was that nuclear medicine actually consists of many medical specialties, because I see patients with cancer, but I also see patients with orthopedic problems, patients with dementia. So I like the fact that I see such a variety of patients. And what I also like about nuclear medicine is that we not only diagnose people, we can also treat people. So for me, nuclear medicine has it all.
That's really interesting. And I want to take that to segue and kind of step back for a minute. If anyone in our audience doesn't understand, can you quickly explain what nuclear medicine is and how it works?
So nuclear medicine is a medical specialty that uses radioactive substances. It's usually created in a lab. And what they do is, so you have your radioactive substance in many hospitals in Belgium, it's made in the basement. So they usually start around 4 or 5 a.m. to make it. And then the first scans will start around 9 a.m. That's also why we don't have any emergencies in nuclear medicine, because it takes about 4 to 5 hours to create the radioactive molecules. And what they do is you actually have two components. First, you have the radioactive substance, and then you also have the tag, or the, I often call it a GPS. And you combine that those two. And the GPS is always different based on what you would like to see. If someone has breast cancer, it will be another type of GPS or tag than when someone has prostate cancer. So what we do is, for example, you are a patient with breast cancer, then you will come to the nuclear medicine department and we'll inject you with a specific type of radioactive substance. Then you'll walk around for 90 minutes and you come back. And then we will take pictures of you with a PET scan. And what you have to know is that a radioactive substance is a bit like a glow-in-the-dark tag. So that glow-in-the-dark tag will attach to all the cancer cells in your body. And when I look at your picture taken with a PET scan, I truly hope that I will only see that glow-in-the-dark tag lighting up in your breast, because that means that the cancer is confined to your breast. And then the treatment is fairly simple, I would say. What we can do is we can amputate the breast and the disease is gone. It would be bad news if I would see that there are spots lining up both in your breast, but also in your liver or on your ribs, because that means that the disease has already spread to other parts of the body. And then we have to, then amputating the breast won't really cure it because it's already spread. So then we have to give you chemotherapy. So coming to a nuclear medicine department can change people's life. I can tell you, oh, you will be cured, or I might have to tell you you'll probably die from cancer.
You mentioned a distinction between nuclear medicine and radiology. And I'm wondering if you could explain that a little bit, what the difference is between the two.
With nuclear medicine, we look at, that's what we call a molecular imaging technique. And nuclear medicine shows you how the body is functioning. So for example, it can show you how the liver is functioning or how the bones are functioning, while radiology is a structural imaging technique that shows you how our bones or how our liver looks like. And an important thing to know is that molecular changes happen before structural changes. So we can, for example, see that cancer is growing in your breast before any lump is visible. So that's why nuclear medicine is so important. We can detect, we can detect breast cancer about 6 months before a CT scan or an X-ray can detect cancer.
Yeah, that's really interesting that it's so advanced now that you can target it at different parts of the body. That's incredibly cool. And what happens after a patient receives this treatment? Does it just flush out of their body, or what happens next?
Yeah, it's excreted through urine, and it usually takes about 24 hours. So I have to tell the patients that they will be radioactive for 24 hours. And when I say that, you have to see the look in their face, the look at their face. They're often like, what? I'll be radioactive. Can I sleep with my husband? They often ask me, can I have sex with my husband? And I have to reassure them, yes, you can. So yeah, you will be radioactive, but it's not dangerous. You can do whatever you want. But to be absolutely sure, we advise them not to hold small babies, little babies, or to breastfeed for 24 hours. But apart from that, they can do anything they want.
How do people feel about this? How do they receive, like, you're going to ingest radioactive material and you're going to be radioactive?
They're often afraid. I have to reassure them over and over again. And that's why I like that you're having this podcast, because I think we have to educate people that nuclear medicine or nuclear energy is designed to be safe. And okay, there are risks, but it can always go wrong. And we have to look at the benefits too. And for nuclear medicine, it has changed a lot of lives.
Yeah, you mentioned cancer, and I know you're also combining your residency with a PhD in dementia, where you're working on diagnosing dementia 10 years before symptoms start. How does nuclear technology help detect dementia, and especially that early?
Yeah, so I'll give you a little bit of background. We know that dementia can be seen in the brain up to 10 years before the first symptoms appear, because right now dementia is diagnosed when people experience symptoms, when they start to forget things. But the problem is, it's already too late then. The brain cells have already died, and there's not much we can do at this point. The only drugs we have in Belgium right now are symptomatic. So what they do is we give you drugs, and they will make you forget maybe 2 or 3 things a day instead of 5 or 6. So it will help you a little bit in your daily life, but it won't do that much. While if we can diagnose you 10 years earlier, so if we can say, oh, you will probably develop dementia in 10 years' time, we have a window of opportunity of 10 years. And in my opinion, it's much, much easier to prevent something from happening than to treat something that has already happened. And I often compare it with a heart attack. Nowadays, we treat people for high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and we do that because we want to prevent a heart attack or stroke from happening in the first place. And I think that will be the same with dementia too. And so, yeah, we use, or I use right now, a PET scan to try to diagnose dementia in an early stage. We're still refining that process because, yeah, it's pretty early, but I think that will be the future of dementia care. And one more thing, in America, there's a drug approved that can alter the progression of dementia. So that's the first drug approved that can really change the progression. So I hope that this will be approved in Canada and Europe in a few years, because that could hopefully delay the onset of the disease. That would be really helpful.
This is so interesting to me, and also just really exciting to know how this could revolutionize care for people and prevent horrible, destructive, life-altering, and deadly diseases. What else is on your radar? What other big advancements are you looking at to see in the next several years in nuclear medicine?
I think the biggest advancement will be in the field of oncology. I truly hope, and I think, that we can change cancer from a deadly disease at this point to a more chronic disease. We already see that with prostate cancer. There are treatments that we can give that can make prostate cancer a chronic disease. And that means that people will die with prostate cancer, but not of prostate cancer.
So you're saying that it's something that they'll have and they'll live with, but it will be treatable to the point that it's not something that is ultimately the reason they die.
Yes, correct.
So it sounds like you're looking at nuclear medicine as a way for preventative treatment for dementia. Do you feel that same way about cancer? I know you're using it now to find, you know, where it's spread, where it is in the body, but are you looking at it at all as a way to, I don't know, maybe do scans ahead of time to confirm like there's no cancer in the body before you have questions that there might be? Is there any other ways you're going to use it preventatively like you are with dementia?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I haven't really thought about that. But as you say, we now have like two main points of view. So we have a diagnostic view. We diagnose cancer, and we also have a therapeutic view where we treat cancer. At this point, I don't think that we'll use it as a preventive measurement because, to be honest, it's just way too expensive to do that now. But I think there will be a lot of advancements in the field of the therapeutic view.
Yeah, because I see, you know, some Instagram influencers and like I think Kim Kardashian did it, do these like full body scans, you know, to see if they have anything that shouldn't be in their body. And I'm wondering if nuclear medicine has a way to kind of evolve that so one day it's, you know, more accessible for more people.
Yeah, I think it could be, but it's still radioactivity. Like as a doctor, I wouldn't recommend everyone to get a PET scan because if you don't need it, why would I expose you to such an amount of radioactivity? Of course, if I think you have cancer and you're maybe about to die, yeah, let's give you a PET scan and hopefully I can treat you. But if you don't have any symptoms, I would say, okay, maybe do a regular blood checkup or maybe an X-ray, but that's not something I even would recommend. I think just living healthy and going to your family physician every now and then would be sufficient.
Thank you for saying that because I'm like, I should sign up for a PET scan right now and see, make sure we found anything before anything happens, right? Like, sign me up.
Yep, it's time. Gotta go.
But I have to say that if there's something in your body, it has to be, I think it has to be 1 or 2 millimeters big before you can see it. So if you're too early, you won't see anything. So not everyone with cancer, if they have a PET scan and it's negative, I can't say for sure you don't have cancer. Maybe it's just too small to see.
Right, right. Makes sense. That makes sense. I you mentioned prostate cancer, and I wanted to ask for you to talk a little bit more about radio cancer treatment, that is improving prostate cancer results.
Yes, that's true. So we have a specific type of radioactive substance that is used to treat prostate cancer, and that's called lutetium. And if we inject that lutetium into the body, it specifically attaches to all the prostate cancer cells in your body. So if your prostate cancer has metastasized to the bone, to the liver, it will attach there and it will give off radioactivity and kill all the cancer cells in your body. And this has absolutely revolutionized the treatment of prostate cancer, because compared to, for example, chemo, it's much more specific. It only targets the cancer cells because of that specific GPS tag. So you won't have the side effects that chemotherapy gives you. You won't lose your hair, you won't get sick. And I have, like, there's one study that showed that people who were treated with lutetium live for about 12 months without their cancer progressing, compared to only 6 months when they were treated with chemotherapy.
I have so many follow-up questions because this is fascinating to me. First, is this something that can be used, or do we hope it to be used to treat other types of cancer beyond prostate cancer? Because it sounds amazing that, one, you can do it without the horrible side effects of chemo, but also the outcome is so great. And then I'm wondering, even in just the case of prostate cancer, is it something that can be repeated? So if you have the treatment and it targets all the prostate cancer cells, you said you could go 12 months without it progressing. Can you come back and repeat it if it starts to reappear and do the same thing again?
Yeah, very good question. So the first question, yes, it has already been used for other treatments and other cancers as well. So that's very promising. And the second part of your question, it can be repeated, but we sometimes see that cancer cells change and that it does no longer respond to that type of treatment. So that's something that we're looking into right now. But you have to know that when people come to see me for that type of treatment, they know that they won't have that much time left. So we as nuclear medicine physicians often give them a few months extra. And at that point, it makes a huge difference.
Is this something you're working on, you know, with the global medical community? It sounds like it's nuclear medicine is very well received in Europe. And, you know, you're making all these advances and doing all these interesting things with cancer and dementia. You know, we're in the United States. Are you working with doctors here or Asia? Is this kind of is there a global consensus on nuclear medicine?
Yes, yes. There are not that many nuclear medicine physicians compared to, for example, cardiologists or gynecologists. So we're a much smaller group. But to give you an example, my study is a collaboration between different countries. So I work with people from Canada, people from the Netherlands, people from New Zealand. So yeah, I feel like nuclear medicine physicians often work together, and that's something that we have to do. I think in Belgium, there are only maybe 40, 50 max nuclear medicine physicians. So we have to work together if we want to achieve something.
Yeah. It seems like such important work, and we need as many people working on it as possible. What else is big in the nuclear medicine space?
I just think that people underestimate the power of nuclear medicine procedures. They often don't know it. They're afraid of it. But we have to tell the world that nuclear medicine scans are truly amazing and that they're designed to save people's life. I think that's my main takeaway from this.
Yeah. Life-saving treatments.
Have you ever had a nuclear medicine scan, a bone scan or a PET scan?
I don't think so.
I've had a lot of x-rays and CT scans, but not anything beyond same. That.
Mm-hmm. That's probably a good thing. Yeah.
Which I guess is good. Yeah it's good.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, I don't need one.
I think it's super good.
Yeah.
Because if you would have needed a PET scan, I would think, oh, is there something wrong with you? Like, do you have any disease? But there are also many type of scans. Like I mentioned a bone scan, which is sometimes a very good alternative to an x-ray. Like when people come into the ER with, for example, a stress fracture, that's type of fracture that people get from repetitive movements, for example, from running or playing football. And when they do an x-ray, it's often negative. So they don't see the fracture because it's not yet there, maybe. It's not yet completely broken, I would say. But if we would do a bone scan at that point, it's a molecular imaging technique. So it would show up, it would light up. And that means that there's something there, but we do not yet see it on an x-ray. So I think that's something that will hopefully get more popular in the upcoming years, because even a lot of doctors do not know how amazing nuclear medicine is and what it can do.
So you can catch this bone fracture before it even happens, really, to prevent it from getting worse.
Yeah, that's good. That's how I would say it. Yeah, sometimes you see that like the bone cells are damaged and that they are repairing themselves. And that's what you see on a bone scan. But if it's not completely broken, if it's inside the bone, like the bone itself, you won't see it on an x-ray.
Yeah, unfortunately, anytime anyone in my family has gone in for orthopedic x-ray, it's been catastrophic enough that even I, who have no medical training, can see that there is something very wrong.
You're past preventative.
Yes. Yeah. At that point, like, if I can tell, I remember when I was pregnant and you're doing ultrasounds and they're, you know, they can see all the, and I couldn't tell anything. I had no idea what I was looking at. They're like, there's the heart, there's the, and I'm like, wonderful. I'm glad that you could tell. But when I go in and see an x-ray and even I can see the break, I'm like, we're in trouble. Pauline, I would love to ask you, we were talking about food a little bit at the top and we are big foodies. We would love to know, this is our international take this week, where is your favorite place to eat in Belgium? Or what is your favorite food?
I don't think I have one favorite restaurant in Belgium, but I would say that I absolutely love our French fries.
Oh, yeah.
That would be my go-to meal every Friday with my husband. Absolutely.
Excellent answer. They're so good.
That is awesome.
What is your favorite food?
Oh, that is such a tough question. You know, somebody asked me this last week also, which is kind of wild that this keeps coming up. And I gave an answer. I love like chicken parmesan, which is an Americanized version of it. I don't even think it really exists in Italy. But, and then I started thinking, like, I also love tacos and like chips and queso. Like, I could go on all day. Like, I love tuna, like sashimi. I really like anything.
I was trying to think about it too, Mary, like what cuisine, and I was trying to think of something uniquely American, but I think something that we do really great here is our own takes on all of these great international cuisines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Tex-Mex. One more question. Are there any other people in the field we should be following, like any other medical, especially nuclear medicine content creators that we should also be following?
So if they want to get in touch with me or follow me on YouTube, you can find me if you look for my name, Pauline Moyart. But if you want to look for other researchers or doctors, one doctor I know is Michael Hoffman. He's an Australian doctor who focuses on nuclear medicine treatments and especially on cancer, like prostate cancer treatments.
Well, Pauline, thanks so much for joining us today. This was so, so interesting. I know our listeners will love this conversation. Really, really cool. And we'd love to have you back as you progress in your research and learn how it's going. That was such an interesting conversation. Pauline had so much knowledge. And I mean, I could talk to her all day. I still have so many questions. But I want to say a huge thank you to Pauline for joining us. We really enjoyed having her on the show. And, you know, it's a great reminder to, you know, jump on the health trends that we're seeing and schedule, you know, all of your checkups and, you know, make sure you're healthy.
I do like the balance that was offered, though, because yes, definitely do preemptive wellness checks, but also enjoy some French fries.
Yes, I will never turn down a fry.
It's all about balance.
Yes, exactly.
If you want to learn more about nuclear medicine, we recommend checking out Pauline's YouTube channel, which we have linked in the show notes.
And don't forget to rate and subscribe to Fissionary on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening today. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time, Fissionaries.